We're going to start the session today with a special guest, Sandeep Singhal from Nexus Venture Partners. Now, Nexus is a key fund in the Indian ecosystem, and they've been around right from the almost from the beginning of the evolution in the Indian startup ecosystem and has been a major player. And we've had some time back, we've had Naren Gupta, whom I've known for many, many, many years from Nexus. And Sandeep is our second guest from Nexus and a very, very knowledgeable person about the Indian ecosystem and how it's evolving, what is going on, and so forth. So I expect that we're going to learn a lot from Sandeep today. Sandeep, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Samara. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with some kind of basic level setting. The Indian software as a service startup scene has gone through some core realizations. India facing SaaS is not venture fundable. It is too slow growth a market. Therefore, if you want to build a fundable company, go global. This is what we're hearing from all our venture capitalist colleagues in the Indian ecosystem. Is this your approach as well?
I would say that we started Nexus with that hypothesis. When we started in 2006, we clearly saw that if you really wanted to build a large business, particularly at that time, the Indian buyers weren't as sophisticated, weren't spending as much money. So if you were a technology provider, you really had to build a global business. So when we set up Nexus, as you mentioned, you have had Naren on the show before. So Naren and I partnered with the idea that we would take companies from India and bring them to global markets. So Nexus has a presence both in India and the US. We have office here in Menlo Park, and we have office in Bombay and in Bangalore. And what we do is, we work with entrepreneurs that we believe can take their companies global from early on. And they have that mindset of building a business that maybe potentially starts with India initially. They get their minimum viable product ready in India with Indian clients, but very early on in the company's growth cycle, they are taking a global view. And also from an investment perspective, we would look at these companies and compare them to their peers in the Valley or in the US or other markets, and make sure that the team that we are backing can compete with their global peers. So that's I would totally agree with you that this is not a recent phenomena, that if you want to build a large SaaS business that you have to look global. I think this is something that entrepreneurs knew in 2005, 2006 as well. In fact, I would say today there is probably more opportunity to do SaaS in India for India. But again, tough to build very large businesses there. It will take time. As you mentioned, growth is
very slow.
Slow
growth. Sales cycles are so long. It just takes very long to build something.
Yeah, there's a sales cycle issue. There's also a distribution issue. To sell in India and to sell SaaS in particular across a large group of customers, it's not very well said. The marketing channels aren't well developed. You don't have very strong sort of tech product marketing in India. So there are all the things that have gotten built in the US are still early days in India.
So let's double click down on a couple of things you said. When you are evaluating a team to check for whether this team can compete in a global business mode, what are you looking for, and what have you learned to look for in terms of entrepreneurs who can actually work in a global context? Sandeep, your audio is gone.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, can hear you now.
Yeah, okay. Yes, yeah, so what I was, so if you are looking to target the global market very early on, then you have to be, you have to understand the global customer need, right? So it just can't be that I'm going to build a product for India and then set it in global markets. The product definition itself at the start has to involve talking to global customers, getting their inputs, understanding the global landscape, who else is there, it's competing, or if you are looking to, get an incumbent out, what is the incumbent doing or not doing well, and how would you position yourself vis-a-vis the incumbent? Those, that level of thinking and understanding requires the founding team to either be, you know, have at least somebody in market, somebody in the U.S., or somebody who has at least worked in global markets and has an understanding. So somebody who may have spent 2 or 3 years here and then chosen to go back, or teams that have one person in the U.S. and one person in India. That in our view has worked better. And you know, there are exceptional cases where people have found opportunity while sitting in India. We've seen open source as a big driver of that. People who are involved in the open source community out of India have, when they're working on projects that are global, sometimes they can see the gaps and sort of go and build a business around that. If you're building an enterprise SaaS product, having a good understanding of how the business is operating in global markets is very important.
And same thing about MVPs. Are you then looking for early customers that have been, that are, you know, international customers that they have built an MVP around when you're looking, evaluating a company?
Yes, there are two ways to do this. One is that you can work with the Indian arms of global customers and, MNCs, we call them, multinational corporations. We can work with them in the India market, but have a clear understanding of how that, Indian operation is aligned with global operations. So if the India operation is very India-centric, then it's very hard to take what you've built for the Indian client global. And so if you are looking to go down the path of working with an Indian MNC with the idea that you will use them as a stepping stone to go global, then it's very important to understand their global operations, and working, with the India team to get that input is critical. The second approach is to look at, what others, like I said, what the incumbents are doing and where the gaps are, and trying and building a better product against that. And if you're building an MVP in that case, then I think it's important to get a few early customers, as alpha customers, beta customers. Preferably get them involved even during a product definition stage, but if not, then getting them early on in as a SaaS company, obviously getting some traction in global markets is very important.
So what key SaaS trends are you particularly interested in right now? Where do you see opportunities? What, like, if you were to kind of tell people that, hey, I want to invest in a company that aligns with this trend, what are those trends?
So, clearly productivity tools remain an important part of the SaaS solution. We are continuing to see that. We're seeing there's a big opportunity in SaaS tools that are sort of data-driven, that are sort of involving data in the way that they are offering the solution to their clients. So analytics-driven SaaS platforms are a key thing. From a market perspective, you know, there are opportunities actually pretty much across the board. You know, we've seen opportunities in the infra play with SaaS. So we have a company called Truva that's playing over there. We have a company called Postman that's in the API space. So, you know, I think the more important thing somewhere in my mind is less the space, but really figuring out what the gap is in any of these markets.
Absolutely.
And, so, you know, it ranges. And particularly if you're doing something out of India, then that becomes even more important because, you know, you're working in a market that's removed, as we discussed, from the global market.
Yeah.
So
that's what we tell everybody is that, you know, this is 2016. The internet has been around for more than 20 years and a lot of things have happened. Smartphones have been around for almost 10 years. So you cannot just assume that you have a, you know, open runway now. You have to really be very granular about finding where the gaps are.
Exactly. That's exactly. I think you've encapsulated what I was saying quite well. It's really the micro level, understanding where the gaps are and just, you know, making sure that what you're building fills that in a much better way.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your portfolio. What have you invested in and specifically why? Let's do a couple of case studies. When did the entrepreneur come to you? At what stage? With what metrics? What convinced you to invest? And what can our entrepreneurs learn from your process of evaluating their funding worthiness?
Sure. So, you know, I mentioned this company called Postman, and Postman is providing an open source tool for API management. Mm-hmm. The company was started by Abhinav Asthana, and you know, this is a interesting example of what I was describing, working with a local sort of global corporation in India, discovering a need and building a solution around that. So Abhinav had done an internship at Yahoo in India. And while he was working with them, he sort of realized that just managing the APIs within the Yahoo development environment itself, right? Being able to, what he was building, making sure that, you know, whatever APIs he was publishing were, you know, current, being used by the right team members on the other side. And then similarly, when he was using APIs that were, you know, being worked out in Mountain View and taking them and using them in India, it was just, you know, it was painful and it was complex. So he saw an opportunity there. He said, you know, this is a problem that a lot of developers would be facing. So took a very developer-oriented approach and built this tool, Postman, and you know, and did it open source. So when he came to us, it was seed stage. My colleague Samir in the Bangalore office met with him first. And really liked him, so we met with Abhinav. And you know, the interesting thing was that he had 650,000 users, or you know, 500,000 downloads of his product when he came and met with us. And this had been completely bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. And when we asked him, you know, how had he done this, it was, you know, he was one person who had built the whole thing, just, you know, working day night to make it happen. So the first thing obviously was the fact that he had identified a clear need. And this is a need that he had, you know, not just seen himself, but post that he had validated that by building a product that, you know, 500,000 people had downloaded. And so that gave us confidence that, you know, he understood the problem well enough. The second thing was obviously his ability to, you know, take care of all aspects of the business, you know, from he did the coding, he did the customer support, he was sort of the marketing guy behind this and everything else. So, you know, when we looked at him in, as I said, in the context of a global entrepreneur pool, we would place him, you know, amongst the top even in the Valley. So we said, you know, here's a person who's sitting in India who could be doing the same thing if he was sitting in San Francisco or, you know, Palo Alto. And so that was the key driver. We invested behind him and have subsequently, you know, helped him build out his team, get the product more enterprise-friendly, team-oriented, but I would say, you know, and get up enough to spend more time in the U.S. But, you know, I would say that from the start, it was really the comfort that Abhinav was a global entrepreneur, that he was really plugged into a global ecosystem, understood its needs, was interacting with global customers, taking feedback, you know, fixing the product, all of that. So that's one example.
One thing you haven't mentioned about this company is the business model and the monetization. What validation did you have that these 500,000 downloads were actually, some percentage of that was converting into paying customers? What was the situation when they came to you?
Okay, good point. So we did have, they had actually small sort of $10 charge for deploying their client for curl. So there was a command line interface that you could connect into Postman. And that, you know, they were charging for that and were getting paid for it. That was one. But more importantly, we actually spoke to some of the users who were at enterprises. One of them happened to be our portfolio company. Excuse me. And we asked the VP engineering at our portfolio company that, you know, if how much would you pay for this and what would be the value? And he said, you know, he drew out two or three other things that he needed to make this much more, as I said, enterprise-oriented, working, you know, for team usage and so on. And he said, you know, if this thing if they fix all of these things, I'd be happy paying, you know, whatever, X dollars per month per user for this. And we spoke to a couple of people in the U.S., sort of, you know, people who had downloaded this software in the U.S. At large companies here, and reached out to them, had conversations with them to understand what they, where they could see a product like this. So similar to what we did with our, you know, with our portfolio company, and again got the same message that if you know these features were added in, they would be open to paying. You know, one person went to the external saying, "Hey, you know, this thing is helping my team so much that if he were to add, you know, these features, I would pay $100 per user per month." Right? So it was, you know, it was up to that. So we were comfortable, you know, with these from this diligence that there was a business model. You know, there are companies like BuildSoft and APG and others who have been in the API space.
Yeah.
They've been more on, you know, API monitoring, management. This was much more on the developer side. But we saw that there is an, you know, openness to paying for such tools.
Is this a trend that you are seeing that Indian developers doing open source projects and getting to some level of scale in terms of downloads and so forth, and then going for financing? Is this happening at some degree of frequency?
Not as much as we would expect. I would have expected more of this to happen when we started Nexus in 2006, 2000. You know, we felt that we would see a lot more you know, solutions around open source and on-demand sort of SaaS software. We had, in the initial days, we didn't see many. The one company that we backed that did quite well was Dimdim, which was open source WebEx, you know, solution that Salesforce acquired. There is a little bit of concern, and I think it's a genuine concern that one has to sort of think through I think you mentioned this, that how do you build a monetizable business using open source, right? So I think that's a genuine concern. Where's the paywall? You know, is the market that you're targeting really amenable to, you know, monetization around the open source, you know, support-led model? The second concern that we see a lot is around, you know, loss of IP. So there is a concern, paranoia, you call it, that if I go open source, then others can see what I'm doing and copy it. And that's one thing that I've seen with at least open source proponents in the U.S., that there, you know, there, it's sort of a it's either you do it or you don't, right? It's a very clear philosophical view that I will build something in open source. I will, you know, let my IP in the public domain, but with the idea that, listen, I own it, I control it. It's important, you know, people understand that, and it's not that people don't want to pay for open source, but I will get paid for it, and also, you know, I will get others to contribute into it. And so in India, we've seen at least some level of reluctance for open source because of this, you know, fear of IP loss, and which is not as much the case in the U.S.
Well, we've seen fabulous companies come up using the commercial open source model, right? MuleSource
yes.
is an excellent company. That's really scaling phenomenally. And,
yeah.
and you know, the other thing that I should mention in this context is there is a particular bootstrapping strategy that we espouse, which is completely contrarian to most accelerators' philosophies. They will not touch a company that's using this bootstrapping philosophy with a 10-foot pole. We do. It's bootstrapping with a paycheck. And open source actually lends itself phenomenally well to bootstrapping using a paycheck. And I've seen a lot of great companies, in fact, MuleSource was a company that came out of that bootstrapping using a paycheck mode of bootstrapping.
No, absolutely. I think there is a lot more that can be done there. And I'm hoping that, you know, over time we'll see more of that come out of India.
Do you want to talk about another portfolio company in some detail that highlights something, some trend that you want to talk about?
Sure. You know, the other company I'll talk about briefly is Arkyn. So Arkyn is an example of a team that started cross-border. So this is a team that came out of VMware. And again, while they were there, they recognized that there was a need to address this, you know, management issue at the, in the software-defined networking area. So as you looked at the software-defined data center, you know, there were various tools that were there around, you know, managing the compute environment. But as people, and virtualization, but as networks were being virtualized, there wasn't really a good solution to manage virtualized networks. And so they, you know, the product manager, there was a team with the product manager from VMware and a head of the R&D team in India from VMware and, you know, a senior architect. The three of them sort of left to start this company. And very clear, as I said, you know, defined a very clear gap in the market with their knowledge of being in market. They had, you know, so Shiv was here, Rohit was in India, and, you know, so Rohit was able to build his team in Pune with, you know, in a much more cost-effective manner than would have cost somebody to sort of do that in the U.S. So, again, global understanding, global team, and, you know, were able to build out the product very quickly, get it to market, get the initial traction. And then, you know, recently VMware acquired them. So, you know, here's an example of a cross-border team from day one. In Abhinav's case, it was Abhinav in India building out something. In the Arkyn case, it was really, you know, a global team from the start. And for
and
us,
what stage, you know, what stage
so
did you invest in Arkyn?
Yeah, so we came in at the very start. So, you know, we effectively, you know, seeded the company. And you know, we expect to see more of these going forward, because it's just, you know, very efficient if the go-to-market strategy is being developed in the US with team members that are based here, and the engineering and the MVP build out and everything else is happening in India with a very strong sort of co-founder that's engineering co-founder. We've seen that in the past with, you know, Dhruva, with PubMatic, and so on. Yes. So we believe that, you know, that approach is, we'll see more of that from a cross-border play.
Especially in the enterprise context. The totally. Companies that are selling to SMEs, global SMEs, are actually marketing and selling from India as well, and getting to further along, actually, before they choose to move to the U.S. in many cases, but that's because they don't have the cost and the overhead of enterprise sales selling. Switching the line of questioning a bit, there are rumblings that the global market for startup technology is slowing and the incumbents are overpowering the new ventures. There's a pretty large article, I think it was in the Technology Review, MIT Technology Review, on this, and I've heard that from a lot of entrepreneurs and VCs as well on the ground. What are you seeing and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, the some sort of key drivers, you know, the cost of sales, cost of building a channel, those costs are, you know, are very high and they remain high, and the incumbents that have, you know, have that legacy infrastructure and the legacy relationships do pose a big challenge for startups, and particularly companies that are coming out of India face even a bigger challenge than startups here, because the startups here typically will have team members that have been in the market and so on. So yeah, I think that issue is valid. That being said, I think there continue to be opportunities. Like, I go back to my original point that this is all about finding those gaps, and those gaps have to be large enough for people to switch to you. And once you can build similar relationships that the incumbents have with your customers, there is always an opportunity to upsell, cross-sell into that market. So you have to be a little bit more, guerrilla tactics are even more important now than earlier. The second thing that's also happening because of this is, you know, capital is a lot more cautious coming into companies. Earlier you would say, okay, fine, I've got my MVP, I finish my, you know, I get my initial set of customers, I'm now in Series B, now I show some scale, and then I raise a large round to do a Series C, which will allow me to build out a large sales force and marketing and sort of really go head on with the incumbents. We've seen that, you know, that model hasn't necessarily worked for everyone, and a lot of companies have struggled to scale Series C and beyond. And that there is a genuine concern in the investor community around whether these companies will IPO, they continue to burn a lot of cash. Yeah. And so, you know, that caution is causing capital to, you know, not be available for startups, which makes it more likely they'll end up in being acquired by incumbents. So there's this dynamic that's playing out. I think, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at the Technology Review article. I'll take a look at it now that you mention it.
The Indian VC market went through very frothy times for a couple of years. And I when I was looking out maybe, you know, 3-4 years back on how the Indian VC market was developing, actually, early on, it was developing slower than I thought it would. And then I thought that, okay, well, maybe the Indian VC market will, it's generally conservative people. They're going to remain focused on fundamentals, and it is going to develop a bit slowly, but it will develop in a more healthy way. And then in the last 2 years, it went completely unhealthy, and it went to exactly the same kind of nonsense that we see in the Silicon Valley market. And then it kind of, this year it has slowed down tremendously. How do you read all this? When can we expect to see something more sane and healthy?
So I think, you know, one word describes it, the FOMO factor. This fear of missing out, I think, caught up in you know, it's been there in the valley for a while. It's sort of caught up in India as well. I look at the Indian sort of VC market as the pre-e-commerce and the post-e-commerce sort of phase. You know, prior to the Flipkarts and the Snapdeals and, you know, Shop2 sort of getting created, there weren't, you know, so people were building businesses that were, as you said, you know, in a much more sort of structured manner. Capital required, it was, you know, India, when it started, when we sort of went to raise a fund, our positioning was that India is a much lower cost sort of market. Right. The amount of capital required to build a company in India will be lower. And therefore, you know, we can do a smaller fund and we can, you know, take companies along further without raising too much capital. So that was the original thesis. And I would say in our first fund, you know, that sort of worked out. The second sort of phase, which is post e-commerce, I think it was driven partly by entry of hedge funds into India and just a lot of capital going in. And that capital, it became a game of who has raised more capital rather than who has a better solution. And that unfortunately led to a lot of capital, in my view, being wasted. And that has led to what you are seeing now, which is, again, people haven't seen the kind of returns that you would expect from that much capital being deployed in the market. And people are now stepping back and saying, hey, you know, do we need to go back and look at capital efficiency? The reason why India was attractive in the first place with capital efficiency, you know, how do we drive businesses to think more around competitive differentiation based on product, based on quality of service, you know, based on fit with customer requirements, rather than really being driven by capital.
Yeah, and it's a much healthier way of building companies. In our philosophy, in the everything we do in this program is focused on capital efficient entrepreneurship, whether it's in India or elsewhere. We really don't believe in this raising crazy amounts of money and then you become, you know, you cannot get an exit if you raise too much money and you're not able to deliver the metrics. You're not going to be able to exit. There aren't that many Facebooks and Salesforce.coms out there. So if you want to support a significant ecosystem, capital efficient entrepreneurship, I believe, is a much more reliable way of building businesses.
No, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
All right, well, Sandeep, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your time and thoughts, and we'll keep in touch, hopefully.
Yeah, thank you very much, Shama. Thanks for having me. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Folks, those of you who are listening, we are going to do a slightly different format today because I have to actually run out relatively quickly, and I don't have the time to do a bunch of mentoring calls today. So Maureen will work with you and make sure that you have your slot in the next few weeks for mentoring. And I promise you, you will not miss your slot. However, we will take questions right now. And so please go ahead and, yes, absolutely, go ahead and ask questions in the public chat. Just make sure you send to all participants. So we'll do the Q&A portion. We'll just kind of push the mentoring portion to the next week. I see a bunch of introductions. Yigit Ispir says he's dialing in from Sofia, Bulgaria. 16-year-old entrepreneur recently working on a project called Idea for Aid Helping Charity. Now, I recently got asked to lead a team about artificial intelligence and education. Good to meet you, and very good to meet you, Igit. Welcome. And then, actually, Maureen points out that DimDim, which was a Nexus company, was the original platform on which we started doing these roundtables. Good point, Maureen. Yes, that DimDim was our first collaborator for these roundtables. Andre Leboud, you're sending me a message privately. Please make sure that you're sending your messages to the public chat, sent to all participants. Yes, of course, you're allowed to ask questions. Please go ahead and ask your questions, and we'll try to address your questions as much as possible. If you like to call in, you're welcome to call in as well. Just make sure that you let us know in public chat that you are calling in. And the number is 650-479-3208, and the access code is 668-479-247. Keep your phone muted until I ask for you. So for those of you who are dialing in late, we spent the first 35 minutes speaking with Sandeep Singhal, Managing Director of Nexus Venture Partners. And Sandeep talked about the Indian ecosystem. Nexus is a cross-border fund that focuses on the India-US ecosystem. And we learned a lot about the evolution of the Indian startup scene. Now, while you're gathering your questions, I'm going to walk you very quickly through how to use 1M1M. I know many of you are figuring out whether this program is the one that you want to use for your acceleration purposes. You will find everything that you need to find at 1mby1m.com. You will find a very rich blog, which just by following that free, extremely rich blog, you will learn a lot. And Igit, I would very much encourage you to start following the blog on a regular basis. You're young and you're, I imagine you're like a sponge. So if you just kind of just soak in everything that you gather from this blog, you will grow very fast and you grow very well. And that's what we want for all of you, is to soak information, soak knowledge, and grow really fast, accelerate your growth as entrepreneurs. You can also go to the Entrepreneur Journeys book series, which has 12 books. There are 12 volumes of Entrepreneur Journeys books, and those books you would be able to gather from Amazon Kindle. All of them are available all over the world from Amazon Kindle. And it basically helps you double-click on one of the different topics on which we have an Entrepreneur Journeys book. So you can focus on bootstrapping. You can focus on different types of bootstrapping. We talked a bit about bootstrapping with a paycheck as a way of bootstrapping earlier in the conversation with Sandeep. Billion-dollar unicorns. This is about unicorn businesses and what my thoughts are. We have 12 to 16 case studies in every single book. So you would hear from very successful entrepreneurs and how they have done what they have done. We have books specifically focused on e-commerce, on cloud, on women entrepreneurs, that's feminine feminism, Feed India, focused on the Indian ecosystem, et cetera. Then you can just walk around in the blog and you'll find tons and tons of information, including video FAQs and so forth. These roundtables happen pretty much every week. Every Thursday morning we are here, and we've had over 300 of these roundtables. Over 50,000 people have attended. The free public roundtables page on the website is where you would register for to attend or to pitch. We also have a premium program where you can get extensive methodology guidance. We have a full curriculum, business development assistance, strategy consulting, help with financing, and help with getting the word out about your product or service and media relations. This is all part of the $1,000 premium membership. You can go to the Million Dollar Club post on the website and on the homepage and see some case studies of our successes. the quantifying the value equation, one-on-one value equation link on the website gives you an ROI analysis of the one-on-one program. We offer $375,000 plus 5 to 10% equity worth of value for just $1,000 annual membership fee. I strongly recommend that you do the one-on-one self-assessment to assess your business idea and your business strategy, because these are the kinds of questions that you need to be able to answer to get to the right milestones in your journey. One-on-one Basic is a curriculum-only program, and this is something we have introduced this year in response to customer requests. So previously, the curriculum was only available as part of the premium program, which is a $1,000 annual membership fee. One-on-one Basic is a $99 a month curriculum-only program. So you could, and if you really invest, let's say 50 hours in 1 month, you can get a tremendous amount out of just the curriculum and learn a lot. So that is another way, a lower cost way of accelerating your education in the entrepreneurship domain. That's pretty much it. You have tons and tons of information on the website on what to expect from the different programs, video FAQs, etc. And you can decide if this program is for you, and we'll be very happy to work with you if you do decide that you want to use the one-on-one platform as your acceleration medium. Now, we have one of the principles of this program is case studies and conversations with people who have done it. And this is why we do these roundtables, and in the roundtables we often have, almost always have, guests who bring perspectives that you can learn from, and we have had over 700 successful entrepreneurs who have shared their case studies, their journeys, their lessons from the trenches that you also get to learn from. And these include over 50 unicorn entrepreneurs, over 400 venture-funded entrepreneurs, and over 250 entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped to success. These are, it's a great body of knowledge that we have made it possible for you to digest in a very accelerated manner. You wouldn't get meetings with these 700 people, even if you tried. So what we've done is we have invited them into the forum, we have talked to them, we have provided you with the transcripts of these talks, and it's like you get to have coffee with 700 really successful entrepreneurs. And you get to learn from them. And then we've also synthesized all this with video lectures alongside these case studies, and you get to learn through that synthesis as well. So we have created a methodology which works. We have been using this now for 6 years. You will learn a lot. And as long as you study, if you do not have the self-discipline to study, if you do not have the rigor, do not join this program. You're not going to be able to deal with it. It's an intense, rigorous program, and it really assumes that you're going to do your own studying, and if you don't do that, we would not be able to help you. Okay, so that's, as you heard earlier in the conversation with Sandeep, we believe in lean, capital-efficient bootstrap startups, and even if you raise money, one, you have to bootstrap to some level of validation, and then two, you will make a lot more money if you can do it in a capital-efficient way, as opposed to getting stuck with a lot of funding and then you can't exit, you can't grow, and you basically enter the twilight zone of venture-funded startups where nothing happens. You don't grow, you don't make any money, you don't get any exit, and that's a really, really sad situation. Okay, so that's pretty much it in terms of what I wanted to share with you on how to use the program. You are welcome to register to pitch at one of the upcoming sessions. There are 3 more in July and another probably 3 or 4 in August. So we'll have plenty of roundtables ahead of us where we will spend the time to mentor you through your situations. And then, other than that, you're also welcome to just go straight to the, one-on-one basic or one-on-one premium, whichever one suits you at this point of your journey. If you have questions about the one-on-one program, whether to join basic or premium, what would be helpful for you, what if it's the right program, any kinds of questions, you can contact Irina Patterson. Her email is irina@1mby1m.com, and she'll be happy to walk you through whatever questions you need answered. That's pretty much it. If you have questions, we'll be happy to answer. You can also call in, let us know. Andre, you have not asked your question. You wanted to ask questions, but we haven't seen your questions, and we're very interested in hearing from you, and this is a roundtable, so we want you to participate. We want you to, you know, ask questions, engage. Asking good questions is how you learn the most. Anybody? Questions? Comments? Nobody has questions. All right. Well, if you don't have questions, then we will come back here next week. And this session usually is 90 minutes. Today we have to cut it short a little bit. Andre is asking, so is this program viable for someone who has never started a business before? It is actually designed for people who have never started a business before. So first-time entrepreneurs have a tremendous learning curve. And this program is the best way to plug that gap in your knowledge, you know, repository, and really accelerate the climbing of that knowledge curve. So it is ideal for first-time entrepreneurs. We assume that you've never started a business before. Andre, where are you dialing from? Folks, I'd love to know where you're dialing from, what you're working on as well. Andre is from New Orleans. Excellent. Anybody else? Introductions. This is a, you know, last call for networking. Where are you calling from? What are you working on? How did you hear about 1M1M? And how can we help you? If you don't participate, then we're going to pretty much close out the session. And ideally, what we want to do is hear from you at the pitch session. So go to the free public roundtable page on the website and register to pitch so that we can actually work on your business or business idea in one of the pitch slots. Josie Aberdeen, Toronto, working on a branding platform for entrepreneurs. Okay, great. Anybody else? Any other introductions? All right, Andre, we look forward to working with you. Any other introductions? All right. Well, we'll see you back here then next week, and we'll work with some of your pitches, hopefully, those who registered to pitch. And Maureen will be in touch with you with the pitching instructions. Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for coming. Bye.